What is the best methodology for presenting your company to investors, industry partners, and public funding organizations? Here is the answer. In this episode, Donna Lavoie presents her famous 15 slides methodology in great detail.
And it is more focused, it's more specific, and it's really about how to tell that company story in 15 slides. It's also meant, Christian, and I know from our conversations that, you know, your audience is a combination of early entrepreneurs, scientists that want to start a company, all the way up to public companies, companies that are, you know, already been at this for quite some time. And so this methodology really does work.
Donna is a proven strategic communications leader in health and science innovation. She's a trusted advisor on strategic communications issues, especially around complex issues where multiple stakeholders are affected. She brings a unique combination of public and investor relations expertise to the table, including product launch experience. Lavoie Health Science was launched in 2001 after a corporate career with signature biotech companies leading strategic communications functions during tremendous growth, product and business launches, and international geographic expansion. For almost 20 years, Donna's efforts combine building Lavoie Health Sciences health and science consulting practice while overseeing key account strategies, agency strategic direction, core competency, and methodology development, growth strategies, and team development. In 2019, Donna led the efforts with Omnicon Public Relations Group to form a strategic alliance to bring health companies a broader set of capabilities and geographic expansion. As an acknowledged leader in health science communications with both public and investor platforms, Lavoie Health Science is recognized as a top 30 independent healthcare agency in the United States. The agency has received more than 35 awards for its client work and is recognized by Inc. 5000 Hall of Fame Fastest Growing Private Companies, Boston Business Journal's Top Massachusetts PR Firms, Pharma Voice 100, and by Outwires. In this episode, we are talking about why are 15 slides sufficient in corporate presentations, why you should have an agenda slide, why an appendix is important, what is better, more detail, or simplicity, the interplay of problem and solution, why the team slide matters, why you need to adapt the presentations to your audience needs, and much, much more. I hope you enjoy this episode the same way as I did. Donna, it's good to see you again after the bio in San Diego. How was the bio for you?
It was terrific. It was so exciting to get back and see everyone and to be back on stage. I will tell you, Christian, that, you know, I had been doing that presentation, I think this was my 12th year, and I had 1 year off, and I had 1 year that I had to do this digitally and talk to myself for an hour, which was really painful for me. And it was so great to be back on stage, but I will say I felt very rusty and I felt a little nervous about it. And so I really had to work on my game, just like everyone else. And I guess that's what we're here to talk about today.
Yeah, that's true. But your presentation was perfect. I loved it in San Diego. So, and I'm very happy, double twice as happy after listening to your opening words, that you are back in front of a computer screen and now talk to me and yourself again.
It's different when I'm talking to you. In the year that I had to do this online for bio, I wasn't talking to anyone.
Really?
It was quite difficult for someone who gets their energy from other people.
So it was pre-recorded?
It was pre-recorded.
Oh, I thought you had some sort of, like we are doing right now, some webinar setting in which you had an audience. No.
No, in that year that it was pre-recorded.
Oh, I fully understand. It's quite interesting to pre-record it.
Very. Or not.
And how was San Diego for you after, I think, 2 years of online experience?
it was terrific. You know, it was so interesting to see. I mean, in the environment that we're in particular at that time, where the markets were in complete meltdown, and we had seen a huge drop off in investment into our sector, the folks came out in droves for the partnering forum. And so, you know, I think that BIO's attendance in the last, you know, week to 10 days, right before the conference, shot up substantially. And everyone was there, and the hallways for the partnering forum were bustling, absolutely bustling.
That's true. I also was locked up here in Vienna for 2 years, so no real life conferences. And BIO in San Diego was for me the first attempt on going to a conference. And I thought that 2 months before it, should I try it? Would we get another lockdown, or will the US or Europe restrict again traveling? So I just said, after 2 years, I need to come back and listen to some amazing presentations. And one of the best presentations that I saw in San Diego was yours, because it tackles a topic that I believe is very important for life science entrepreneurs, especially in these days, as you said, when capital is becoming scarce again and investors think two or three times more before investing. You call your methodology and your presentation the 15-slide presentation. What is the reason for that?
That's correct. So that is a term that we coined, and when we submitted to the U.S. Trademark Office, they actually came back with this recommendation. And so we probably submitted something like this, and this is what came back in the official trademark that we received from the Trademark Office. This is actually our second trademark. The first one is on the LHS immersion process, which is our positioning and messaging methodology that is quite popular. So the 15-slide presentation is an offshoot of that, and it is more focused, it's more specific, and it's really about how to tell that company story in 15 slides. It's also meant, Christian, and I know from our conversations that, you know, your audience is a combination of early entrepreneurs, scientists that want to start a company, all the way up to public companies that are, you know, already been at this for quite some time. And so this methodology really does work for a range of companies, for sure. And, you know, that is sometimes the difficult thing for me when I'm even presenting at BIO, is to really understand who's in the room and how I can be most helpful to the folks there. But you'll see from the methodology that there's a lot of flexibility to it, and you can really mold it to your specific situation. So shall we get right into it?
Let me ask you one final question before we get into it.
Sure.
When I work with startup founders coming from science, and I sit down with the women and the men and raise the topic of, guys, we need to talk about presentations. They look at me puzzled and say, we are presenting for decades now, and we know how to do that. And then come back and say, no, I don't think that you know how to present to a certain audience. I would like to hear your opinion. Why do you think it's important to train scientists who usually have 1 or 2 decades of presentation experience in the science field into the 15-slide methodology?
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
You love listening to podcasts, but have you ever thought about starting your own podcast? Maybe you want to build a brand, grow your business, or are looking for an excuse to talk about your favorite hobby. Whatever your reason for making a podcast, Buzzsprout is the place to start. Since 2009, Buzzsprout has helped over 300,000 people launch their own podcasts. Buzzsprout walks you step by step through the whole process and will give you powerful tools to start, grow, and monetize your podcast. Ready to get started? Click the link in the show notes to get our free step-by-step guide to starting your podcast today.
Yeah, I think that's sort of the million-dollar question, right? And it's something that I will bring up in my talk a little further into the slides, is that, you know, we as an industry have a huge dilemma. Most of our companies are led by scientific minds. And scientific minds is what sets us apart, right? In many cases, it's what sets us apart from large pharma. And one of the reasons that large pharma continues to do significant deals with companies in the biotech, biopharma, life science space. And so I think one of the challenges is that we want everything to be technically accurate. And when we're trying to be technically accurate, we're not telling a broader story. We're focused on the detail rather than the story. And, you know, what I'm going to show you in this deck is that we need to be cognizant of both. And I'm not saying when we tell stories that we should let go of the detail, because the detail in our business matters. It just really comes down to, when do you share the detail, to what audience, and at what time? This presentation, you know, as I talk at bio about, is really about how do you introduce your company, and then the detail comes later. Once you get into diligence and broader discussions, more detailed discussions with, you know, the scientific groups at Roche or, you know, something in that elk, then, you know, your presentations will become more tailored to that specific meeting. So what we're really talking about is how do we capture audiences? How do we capture investors? Investors are people. People are investors. And how do we tell a broader story so that it's not just about our companies? We have an obligation as a sector, honestly. I think it's come down to that, right? We have an obligation as a sector to educate people about what we're doing and make our case, because we have a lot of obstacles ahead of us, you know, with continued discussion on price controls and everything else. And if we can't communicate what we're doing and why it's important, then our investor audience for public companies is going to continue to remain a small few.
I couldn't agree more. It's at the end of the day, it's all about serving the patient. And I think your methodology is the best way to catch the attention of investors and keep them interested, and also from industrial partners after the first meeting. So let's get right into it, I would say, and lead us through your methodology.
Great. And feel free to jump in with any questions or any comments for that matter, you know, things you don't agree with. I'm happy to
do so.
So just very quickly on us, and I won't spend much time on it at all. We've been at this for quite some time. The methodology was born about, I'd say, 10 years ago. We're very excited that we announced last week that the trademark office actually extended the trademark on both of our methodologies. So that was exciting news for the team. So let's start with, you know, why are we here? In your presentation, your audience's presentations to various audiences, it's much like what we just talked about, is, you know, the goal of the presentation is to suit the needs of your audience and your objectives. So if this is a presentation for a highly technical team at Roche, this is not going to be the presentation necessarily, right? That may be a more detailed presentation. The objective of this is to really set your objectives of what you're trying to accomplish. In this case, you know, my example is that this company is seeking a partner from Asian markets, and currently has partners in both the EU and US. So it's a very specific ask. There may be a specific ask of, we've covered Series A and we're currently in a Series B or a crossover round or whatever the case may be. So being true to what you're there for is really important and respectful to the audience and to the other side. Just like my objective today is to communicate the 15 slide topics and hopefully have your audience understand how to tell their story more broadly. So we talk about conventions, and conventions being important and why conventions are important. And we don't always think about this, but I often see slides that are not done correctly, in that our eyes are trained to move from left to right or up to down and not the opposite. But many times I see the point of the slide in the opposite direction, which confuses the mind. So it makes it very difficult to process that. And, you know, your brain is trained to use experience in cognitive shortcuts. And so I know that when I look at information, I want to do things fairly quickly. And I think, you know, you shared with me some data about the amount of time that people spend on looking at somebody's presentation. I think it was 2 minutes or something. Is that correct?
Yeah, I think 2 minutes, 30 seconds, something.
Yeah. And so when I look at things, I'm automatically going to the right. I want to see what the bottom line here, or at the bottom. I'm not spending time, if I have to spend time looking at the chart or the graph or the slide or whatever it is, I'm very disinterested quickly.
May I ask you one question on the convention side? Before the pandemic, I was traveling with the Austrian trade agencies quite frequently to China, to Japan, and to South Korea, where they have a little bit different conventions. I also heard from colleagues who did business with African countries, Saudi Arabian countries, that also the conventions might differ. What is your expertise and experience in that field when it comes to international presentation? Is it sufficient that we go with the conventions that we use in Europe and the United States, or would you recommend to also take the cultural background into your considerations when preparing for a presentation?
No, I think that's a great point. I think you certainly have to. That's a great point. And I don't make that in this presentation. Is that, yes, you certainly need to think about the conventions and the culture and in the market in which you're presenting to, and that the ask is with. This particular focus is, because this is designed, this deck particularly is designed for the U.S. market. And the majority of companies are seeking investment in the U.S. market. So yes, I think that is 100% accurate.
Especially the European ones tend to seek in the U.S. market.
Exactly. Also, colors, you know, colors have an effect on people, and how people think about, you know, their mood when they're talking to you. How your slides look, how you come across. These are the small things that, you know, may not seem like they matter that much, but, you know, they certainly can help to add to, you know, the audience's receptiveness to what you're communicating. So we talk about, you know, colors and conventions improving learning by 75%. So just something to think about. In our industry, there's a lot of blue used, certainly in the pharma sector. And I would say that, you know, most companies have some form of blue. When I asked at the bio convention, you know, how many companies are using some forms of blue, the majority of the hands were people raised. We had a client not that long ago, actually it was a European company, and they had a very, I guess, different view, is that they actually were people who didn't come from the sector, and they actually felt differently. They wanted to not be part of convention. They didn't want blues. They wanted, and especially from a brand perspective, they wanted something truly unique. And, you know, I guess that's okay too. I think it just has to be, that would have to be tested for sure. You know, a company like Vertex, who is a client of ours for many years, went with purples in the early days. And as you know, purples depict royalty, creativity. And it certainly has worked for them. I don't think anybody sort of thinks about, well, Vertex is the purple logo. Mm. I'm here in Boston, and just down the road, you know, is the Vertex headquarters and this huge purple Vertex sign. So it's interesting.
Must look amazing.
Yeah, It is amazing, actually. So, you know, there's a lot of wisdom out there from a lot of folks. Many people in our sector know Dennis Purcell. You know, his one from Aislinn Capital. He's the founder of Aislinn Capital. And he often has said, tell me something I don't already know of what interests him. Albert Einstein said, if you can't explain it simply enough, you don't understand it well enough. I thought that's a very interesting quote, right? Something to think about for sure.
I think, let me ask one question to that. I think, I mean, it's a tough cookie for scientists, especially in the early stages. Just thinking about Emmanuel Charpentier, for example, CRISPR Therapeutics, gene editing, when they were fundraising. When I look at this slide, are you telling me that you encourage scientists to do their best to also make their pitching presentations very simple initially for the first conversation with investors, even Correct. When the investors are from the field?
Correct. I mean, even if they are from the field, right? I mean, you're going to get a mixture for sure, right? You're going to get a mixture. And as we all know, especially in the early phases, unless you're going with angels or non-classical investors, and that's sort of what you have to think about is, you know, right now, more than ever, classic biotech investors are on the fence. They're not putting money to work. Now, there's been a few deals announced, but I feel pretty comfortable that many of those deals were in the works for some time before they were announced. So the pickings are very small right now. And there's a lot of companies sitting out there thinking that they would have been capitalized by now, and they're not. And so they have to look at alternative sources. And if they don't have a story that's easy enough to understand and could be, you know, run through a diligence process on the details, then that makes it tough. You know, there's a lot of capital in this country. There's a lot of capital in the world to be put to work. But not everybody is a PhD, MD, understands clinical development and, you know, has gotten drugs to the market.
So basically, if you want to expand your audience or your target audience within amongst the investor community, it's best to keep it really simple at the beginning. It captures the attention of investors who are familiar with biotech, but also opens the possibility to engage with investors who have never before invested in any life science company.
Correct. And so I would say that you know, for most companies, I don't think I've met a company yet who walks through the door with the deck without detail. The details, the gory details, are in every presentation. We're working with a company in the CAR T space, actually, and they're a terrific company. They just signed a very, very large deal with over $100 million upfront today with Roche. That's Poseida Therapeutics, by the way. And they're a terrific company, and they have a very detailed science, very detailed technologies, and there's a lot of names for a lot of things. So, you know, with that, we've got to sort of unwind that a little bit and then wind it back up.
Must be a long work to go through all the data and select a few bits and pieces.
Not easy. So here's another sort of thought. Many people know Peter Lynch. He was actually from Massachusetts, continues, actually lives in Marblehead, Massachusetts, in the town next to me. And, you know, Peter is well-known portfolio manager at Fidelity Investments, has written many books and world-renowned. And I, you know, took these quotes, which I think is interesting. Invest in what you know. And he's written many books on this, right? If you can't explain to a 10-year-old why you own a stock, you shouldn't own it.
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Money is all around us, and we think about it more than almost every other aspect of our lives. But how can we make more of it, and what's our drive for building wealth beyond just the numbers in our bank account? Join us on the Make More podcast as our host Matt Heslin brings to you a dynamic lineup of experts in the world of investing, business, health, and beyond. Together, they unpack the secrets to not just surviving, but thriving in today's economy. It's about more than just wealth. It's about crafting life experiences, seizing opportunities, and building a legacy. Subscribe now to the Make More with Matt Heslin podcast and join us every week for new expert insights and inspiration.
He's a big idol from me, and he explains all the mistakes I frequently make.
Right. So, you know, another, you know, and so I entitled this slide Industry Dilemma, right? Because that's exactly the problem that we have. We have this issue, not just with investors. We have this issue in Washington. We have this issue, you know, maybe sometimes with even the FDA, the regulatory authorities. So communication becomes front and center more so than ever before. Mm. So let's get right into it. And what I'm going to cover now is the 15 slide topics. For ease of time, I'm going to breeze through this pretty quickly in the bio presentation because I had more time. I have a number of slide examples. I still include some slide examples here, but nowhere near as many. So I'll just, you know, so that presentation for bio is available. They did make it available to folks so that you can get it through that. And then the older versions of this talk are on YouTube somewhere. You can just Google it. So here are the 15 slide topics. And I'll just say, this is sort of the overall, right? I've seen many companies kind of take this and meld it and make it work for them. All right. Let's say you don't plan to commercialize. If you don't plan to commercialize, you're not going to have a whole section on commercialization strategy. You're going to talk about partnerships and how you and what's your business model and that you intend to partner or that you already have partnered. So, you know, these are the topics starting from the overview to the agenda to the problem to the solution to the market, competitive positioning. The team, I'm going to spend a little bit more time today on the team, the clinical pipeline, the supporting data, regulatory manufacturing. And again, manufacturing may not be something that folks are planning on doing themselves, or it may not be relevant. Financial roadmap and what the ask is, investment thesis, milestones, and any closing slides. I do think that there are a lot of companies that will have appendix slides, and that's for the very reason. Let's say, Christian, you get into a meeting and you have a deck and it's a pretty general deck. And then sitting there on the Zoom or in the meeting, you have, investment company that brings their MD, PhD, who's a specialist in the sector that you're in. Well, you know, you're going to take out your appendix slides probably for that meeting. Like with those slides, let me go to the appendix and answer those questions and show them. So that's how I would handle that. So let's talk about the title slide. The title slide, I think, is very important. It's important because it's your company's brand. It's your tagline. This is where you may say why you're excited about the opportunity and why you're here, speaking with either a group or in a one-to-one meeting, and what the ask is. And, you know, I talked about that earlier. So you're going to have here your company name, your speaker name, and your conference name, et cetera, et cetera. I left this slide in because I really love this slide. I'll tell you why. I love this slide because it shows you how there are different types of companies and there's no right or wrong. Right? What's right for Arena or what's right for Grow or for Vertex or PabMed may not be right for your company. It doesn't really matter. The point is that it's very clear in each of these situations what the company's positioning is and really, you know, communicates the vision in just one slide. And I show you this slide. From Vertex, you can see the date. Okay, 2003. And this was in my archives. And we were working with Josh and the team at Vertex in the early days. And he had one vision, building a major drug company. He didn't say rare diseases. He didn't say infectious diseases. He had a big vision. And you can see that, you know, the pills there, which is, you know, it's more pharma-like. But the history and the rest sort of falls suit, right? Vertex started out with a huge pipeline. They ended up in HCV. We worked with them when they were in HCV, as they had a marketed product in that area. Mm-hmm. And then they pivoted to the rare disease space. We actually were involved in a project with them, with the original team on the rare disease side, figuring out how do we get the investment community to actually value these assets.
I think this slide is really key to success, as you say, not only presentation. I think also pitch decks tend to be sent around via email. And when I look at your Vertex example, building a major drug company, from my own experience, I know that some investors like that and others don't. So when you put the, let's say, the hook or the call to action or the vision at the first page, you let the audience self-select whether the opportunity is interesting or not. And those Correct. Who say, I don't want to build a major drug company, I want to sell it immediately to the pharma industry, won't open the deck, which saves a lot of time down the road when fundraising.
Yes. No, that's a great point. That's a great point. And then you have a company like Grow, you know, which is, you know, working specifically in protein therapeutics. You know, the tagline, redefining protein therapeutics with an expanded amino acid alphabet. It's a very specific program, you know, geared to a very specific audience. It's very high science, but it has a very different feel from building a major drug company. And neither one is correct. It's just what is the right thing for you.
And this takes usually some time to find out before going fundraising to yes. have the goals clear at the beginning.
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
The Coaching Conversation 2024. This podcast is 100% dedicated to leadership and leadership within the workplace coaching area. We work with companies throughout the world teaching leaders how to coach their employees. This podcast is dedicated to teaching specific strategies, frameworks, coaching models, and now artificial intelligence strategies to help leaders drive greater teamwork, collaboration, cooperation, greater attitudes, better motivation, coaching career development, just to name a few. I hope you'll check out our podcast.
Right, because, you know, investors or even employees, for that matter, right? We have a number of clients who are very worried about attracting employees. They want to know, where is this company headed? Is this aligned with what I want? Do I want to work for a company that's building a big company, or do I want to work for a company that's deeply rooted in science? And that's, you know, what their main focus is in culture. Mm. They're two different things for sure.
I couldn't agree more.
So company snapshot, this is where, you know, the company overview, I think many of you know this. There's many things you can put on these slides, you know, the product category, the year started, perhaps, you know, some people like to say, you know, founded in Vienna, founded in Boston or whatever, you know, with blue chip investors or, you know, with seasoned management team, cash raised to date, partnership mentioned if you have them, or grants or what have you. So yeah, that's an important slide to have. The second topic, and not everybody does this, is to have an agenda with, you know, what you're going to cover, and tell them what you're going to cover. And then it gives them the opportunity to say, well, are you going to cover this today? And then you have the opportunity to say, you know, I wasn't prepared to do that, but I have those in appendix slides, or I can send that to you afterwards. I think a lot of times what happens in presentations is, I know what happens to me a lot when people present to me is, I don't know what's coming next. And when you tell them upfront what they expect, they could say, okay, this is how we're using our time. I'm going to get what I want, or I'm not going to get what I want today. Topic three is describing the problem in layman's terms, perhaps use of infographics, backup facts, and any use of research that you might have. I have noted that sometimes companies, and I don't think it's terrible, but sometimes what they will actually do is put on the slide at the top, the problem. And then the next slide says the solution. It's not wrong, but there are better ways to do that. You can still have your slide in your, you know, in your template or your starting phase when you're developing it and call it the problem. And then reimagine your headline to be more focused on something more interesting rather than the problem. Right? It could be something, you know, taking, you know, say in the presbyopia space, is that, you know, there's a presbyopia remains a key problem globally, for example, rather than to say the problem. It's just another way to say it.
Makes sense. Let me ask you one question. So the problem and the solution, why in your opinion is that important to have that at the beginning of the presentation, these two topics, talking about problem and solution? When I think, for example, about gene editing, I mean, gene editing is an invention, is something that is scientifically sound, or has been scientifically sound. So because of that, Emmanuel Charpentier and Jennifer Doudna got the Nobel Prize. And when I look at the presentation, they talk a lot about problems and solutions, coming from a different angle, talking about problems and solutions for the real world, for the pharma industry, or for patients later down the road. Why is that important to make the switch from pure scientific problems towards more corporate problems, towards more real-world problems? Why is that key to success when fundraising? I get this question quite frequently when I talk to scientists.
I think you can do either, right? I think, mm-hmm. I think, you know, there's to your point, there's two things to address. One is why do we need gene editing at all? And then the second thing, which is where most companies I find focus on, because in their minds, they already think that it's accepted that gene editing is a technology that's here to stay and that people understand it and it's accepted. And so they focus more on here are the challenges with that we've seen in gene editing, and here's why our technology is addressing those challenges and why we think we're going to be more successful.
Mm. Makes sense.
So those are two different things. And again, it depends who you're talking with. If you're walking into a room of angel investors that are not necessarily sector people, you may have to explain to them a one slide or two slide primer on gene editing and why it's important, and then talk about why what you have is different or why it's needed.
Makes sense.
And I think that's, you know, and that's what we're finding too, as the industry evolves and continues to grow with more and more companies, is it's kind of what the problem is in general. As we've seen so many IPOs and so many companies get funded, is why do we need another company doing XYZ? So for example, in oncology, you know, we have hundreds and hundreds of companies. Why do we need another oncology company? And so you've really got to make your case as to, everybody understands why we need oncology solutions. That's easy. But what do you have that's different, and why is this going to have a chance of being more successful than what's already being studied? So topic five is about the market and the target product profile. I will say that most of the time, companies and entrepreneurs, executives do cover the patient population or the market fairly well. I don't think that that's usually in question. I think what's more in question and where folks need to spend more time is on the target product profile. I can tell you that the number of times I've sat with companies and I would say, all of this sounds terrific. So fast forward, how would this be used in a clinical setting or in a real world setting based upon the fact that we already have X, Y, and Z that's being utilized? And that's kind of the key money question. And many times, you know, we have to change workflow and behaviors because if it's a hospital product, you know, the hospitals are geared to do things in a certain way. And so all of a sudden you have something totally different that's going to disrupt the workflow. And so really taking time to explain that, because I think sometimes stories get stuck here. It's like, this is a great idea, but actually, even if we get it approved, how is it going to be used? So it's less about whether you can get something approved, but more around once it's accepted and on the market, are people going to buy it and what that is going to take? So really two different things. You know, I think a lot of times we focus on regulatory because regulatory is so challenging, in particular right now.
I agree to you. The implementation in the hospital setting is a science by its own, I would say. Especially in Europe, you have a lot of different countries, a lot of different systems. And thinking about that before pitching to the industry or to investors, I have at least some outlook at hand, makes sense. But I know from my experience here in Europe, especially talking with early stage scientists, it usually creates a huge uproar. So why is that important? It's good that you pointed out. Thank you very much.
Sure, no problem. So topic six is about competitive positioning, and this is within the limitations of the data, right? So the most successful charts show a salient point. Sometimes charts, you know, what we want to be able to do is to show a chart that is easily understood without having to explain it. And I guess, you know, understanding a chart depends on the audience and the level of sophistication of the audience and whether they're used to seeing slides that look a certain way. Certainly, if you're presenting in a medical audience and peer review, that's easy. And I think, you know, very scientific entrepreneurs walk into fundraising thinking that they're in that setting. And so it has to be simple. But it also can't be, it has to be simple, but it has to be as accurate as possible so that it doesn't look like you're not tight with your data, so to speak, right? Because there's certainly a lot of that sometimes out there where there's questionable data and, you know, people get turned off if they think it's questionable data, right? So there's a fine line there. And so I'm, you know, not suggesting dumbing it down so much that it doesn't give you credibility. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. I think investors particularly are trained in finding mistakes and inconsistencies. So it absolutely makes sense what you say. I agree with
that. Correct. So, and also, this is also weird that if you have peer-reviewed publications, you don't necessarily need, you know, sometimes people put in like all the charts from all the posters or all the publications. You don't need to do that, but wouldn't it be nice to just see, you know, screenshots of the publications that you're in and show the credibility of the fact that you've published the data. And if they want to do the diligence and start looking at that, you can share all of that in an afterwards. So topic seven it's really about the team. And I think the team, especially for early stage companies, but honestly, for any company, regardless of the size, it's really about the pedigree and the team and the backgrounds of the people. And that the backgrounds would be different for different stages of company. And, if you're going towards a commercial footprint, if you're a digital health company, you're going to get there faster, that you may need different talent than you would if you're an early stage clinical company. So having the photos and the backgrounds of each key member, but that doesn't mean, all the backgrounds, every detail. It just means being able to tell the story about the unique culture or how you came together. It might be part of the storyline is, this team worked together and was successful in bringing XYZ product through phase three, or whatever the story may be, or that we have a diverse group of talent from different sectors who brings the best of the best. Whatever that storyline is, that's what you need to tell.
I think one point to add to the team, I think this page particularly should radiate that the team is the best possible solution for the investor to tackle the problem and work on the solution.
Yes.
I think this should be, in my opinion, the key point. In the end of the day, when I look at early stage companies, besides patents and publications, which is quite nice, but the only thing investors really invest in are teams at the end of the day, because there is nothing more. And if this slide nails it and the investor gets the feeling it's really an A team and they are the best in that area, even when the technology fails, it's an asset for the investor.
Correct. So this is, a little company, very successful, GrowBio. And Dan Mendel, who's the CEO, is actually a protege of Professor George Church, who's very well known. So this is, this is a great team. And all of these folks have worked together. They have a nice initial group of investors. So it's a nice slide that kind of, tells that story. And Dan does a great job of telling his story for sure. I show this just because this is Arena, and I talked about Arena a lot at Bio. It's a company we worked with prior to the company being sold to Pfizer. And this is actually a mock-up slide that we were playing with for the JP Morgan conference. It's actually last year, the year before that they announced the acquisition. And for a company like Arena, what they really wanted to accomplish was less about, we have this person and that person because they're a multi-billion-dollar market cap company. It was really more about the leadership team with the expertise and resilience to take the company forward, the commercial regulatory M&A success, as well as the clinical success that they had built over the years as the company pivoted from one key area to a much broader focus.
I find this slide very interesting. I love it, actually. Was this slide in addition to the team slide, or did it replace the team slide?
It actually, in the case for Arena, replaced the team slide. This was for the JP Morgan presentation. And, most of the investors there know the team, that was, presenting and that was there at the helm. So this was more about bringing to bear sort of the collective senior management team under Amit Munshi, who was the CEO.
Great idea.
Thank you. So pipeline and clinical data. So this is, in my view, kind of a section. I call this topic 8-9, right? Because this might be a couple of slides and there'll be backup slides in your appendix. This is sort of the overview of compounds or products. If it's not a pipeline, it's products you're going to talk about, whether they're partner or proprietary, timelines, and any summary and top supporting evidence. So this is really meant to be kind of at a high level. Sometimes what happens is in companies that have big pipelines, they'll come to us and they'll say, well, you know, we only have 15 or 20 minutes to talk. We can't cover everything. So in that case, what you have to do is to show the pipeline and then perhaps pick one particular, whatever is kind of the leading area that you want to focus on. Or if you're at bio and you want to partner a certain asset or group of assets, you may say, this is our pipeline and this is the data on the assets that we're looking to partner out. Nobody cares about something that you're taking forward on your own. So, you know, again, it's a judgment call. Here's Arena's pipeline. It's a little hard to read because there's an awful lot here, but I guess that was the point, right? I do like the design of this slide that our designers worked on here under each key category in the GI, derm, and cardiology area. And then at the bottom, you can see the partnerships, which is nicely laid out. And on a big screen, you can see this. And then, you know, in a case, you may want to focus on GI or derm or what have you. But it gives, you know, the focus of where the trials are being run and the indication, and then the stage and the next step actually inside of the line there.
Was this slide for the JP Morgan presentation?
Yes, it was. Yeah. This was part of that same deck that we developed. Yeah.
In my opinion, it makes sense because at JP Morgan, you usually tackle investors who are later stage investors.
Correct.
And with a pipeline, you can demonstrate probably the risk mitigation within the company so they don't bet on one single asset, but on a very mature pipeline with phase three projects and also earlier stage pipelines. So the risk profile of this company is different than, for example, an early stage company with nothing in the clinic.
Correct. Correct. Exactly. Exactly. And we've seen all forms of that for sure. I'm going to skip through this one. This is more of just a summary slide for Grow on, you know, initial data, right? Just to show you kind of the difference, right? Because much earlier stage company focused on, you know, here's what the initial data suggests. And with the two high profile, high value profiles for the two areas in which they're working. Very different approach and focus. Topic 10 is where you move into the regulatory strategy. This is where, you know, you may cover, geography, highlight milestones, achievements to date, and then also, you know, talk about sort of where you're at, you know, whether you're fast track, orphan status, pediatric, waiver, sector, et cetera. And so the many ways to do this, I'm just giving one example. This is a diagnostics company, actually Binks Health, which is a client of Lavoie's. They do have a CLIA-waived product. It's called the Binks IO. It's a molecular platform enabling single visit diagnosis and treatment for chlamydia and gonorrhea. And actually, this is a nice slide because the FDA actually put out a press release on this, right? So it really does give kind of a nice validation. And I would say that most of the time that doesn't happen, right? So a nice slide. Manufacturing, certainly if you're in gene therapy, CAR T, you know, want to talk about manufacturing, certainly important aspect. And, you know, if you're a vaccine producer, for example, manufacturing is critical path. And so, you know, you need to decide yourself what's important to discuss. Now, this is Lucid Diagnostics. It's a client of Lavoie's, public company. Actually, we helped take public, and it is a subsidiary of PAVMed, which is another medical technology company that's public. They have a product called EsoCheck, which is, you know, if you think about Cologuard for colorectal cancer, is a diagnostic test. This is basically the same principle, only for esophageal cancer, and they are a commercial company rolling out. So, of course, you know, manufacturing and logistics is a pretty important aspect to their commercial plan. Topic 12 is commercial strategy. If you're not going to commercialize, this is where you talk about partnerships, what you're looking for, what you might already have in place, or just your partnering strategy. If you are going to commercialize, talk about maybe your marketing plan. It might be as simple as you've hired a new chief commercial officer and you've begun advocacy relationships. You know, if you're in Alzheimer's, for example, that would be important. And your medical communication strategy, what KOL development that you've done, and your publication and medical meeting strategy. And if you're beginning to really work on presenting data at key medical meetings, this is where you may want to talk about that. It doesn't all have to be on the slide, but it could be part of your talking points. This is a slide, again, on the theme of ARENA, really leaning in to a message around launch readiness for their assets. And again, rather than a lot of detail, really just focusing on, you know, how they're putting the critical pieces in place for etrasimod, which is what the key asset that Pfizer was interested in for market entrance. And they talk about, you know, developing insights and clinical evidence, participating in client exchange, ensuring access and harnessing tools like AI, and then really building out the customer engagement model. This is also a slide of ARENA is talking about their global presence as they were beginning to really communicate a commercial strategy. This is a slide from a company working in presbyopia that's also a client of LHS, and was part of a marketing strategy to really, you know, begin to share data. This is data from IQVIA, which talks about surveys from optometrists and ophthalmologists about presbyopia and whether they would, based upon the target product profile, whether they would prescribe this product, which is in this case Bermacol. We're winding down here, Christian. This is topic 13. This is a summary of your financials. If you're a public company, this is where you may talk about market cap, shareholder shares outstanding, any insider holdings. But if you're a private company, you may just simply say we've raised $35 million to date. You may verbalize the fact that your current value is $60 million, for example, and that you're currently, you know, in a Series B and moving into a crossover for an IPO in 2024, for example. As a public company, you're going to want to stick to whatever your current communication is and guidance to the street so that you're remaining consistent. So this is a slide for a private company. I've masked this because it is a confidential company, but it does talk about the capital requirements for their phase two and how they plan to do that with each of their assets and how they plan to use the capital. Topic 14 would be about milestones and summarizing those key milestones. This is ARENA's near-term milestone slide. I like it. It talks about the product, the indication, the event, and the time frame. And just a little tip, I hope that companies are not giving specific dates to their milestones and that they're giving themselves enough leeway. I actually don't agree with this milestone that says 4Q 2021. I would never give a quarter. I would always give at the minimum halves. In particular in these markets, because no one's getting credit for it anyway. Topic 15 is your summary. Here's a summary for a private company working in the vaccine space. And, you know, four quick ideas about why you should be interested with their planned Series B round of $75 million to take them through a phase one, two. POC, proof of concept studies. And this is a large public medical technology company, very different focus, but and it's focused on profitability and value to customers and advantaged market positions. Again, public company focus, but key high level investment highlights there.
May I ask you some question on the deal you proposed on the previous slide? So this one, you write here, planned $75 million Series B round, advanced clinical development. What's your recommendation? How specific should people be on this detail? I heard two opinions. So one opinion is be as specific as possible because investors want to know how much they should invest and what milestone they achieve, and ideally also tell them what valuation you expect. So it helps shaping their expectations. And the second opinion I heard on the market is don't do anything of that because the investor should come with the first offer and should tell you how much money they want to invest. What's your opinion after a few hundred companies that you and your team worked with?
Yeah, it depends who you're talking with. So if you're talking with established players that have a lot of money and you have here that you're planning to raise $10 million in a Series B, you may be talking to the wrong people. Mm. So most of the, you know, larger investors need to put $20, $30 million to work to make it work for them. And of course, markets are changing and, you know, we're actually seeing a lot less and some of these funds putting a lot less money to work at the moment. But, you know, so this is a moving target. But I will say historically, if you weren't looking for at least a decent amount of capital, then they're wasting their time talking to you because they're not going to put, if they want to lead around or co-lead around, they're not going to put $4 million in. There may be a follow-on later down the road. But I mean, I've been in meetings with investors, with a company, actually a European company, private. And we went into the meeting. I think we were asking at the time for $35 to $50 million. And the investor loved the story at the first meeting and said, how would you feel about 75?
What did you do?
They took it. They took the money and the company was then sold to Novartis.
Oh, great.
So it's a highly successful company and the product is actually on the market right now.
Congratulations.
Novartis ophthalmology company. Yeah. And so, you know, it was a highly successful situation. Not all situations are like that. And it's wonderful when you can be part of that. But I think, the thing is that if you're a clinical stage company, you have to ask for a lot. Otherwise, you're not going to be taking your programs forward. Depends on which therapeutic area you're in. If you're a digital health company or a medical technology or diagnostics company, you might only need 15. And so you need to be talking to different people. So that's part of, you know, what is not part of this lesson today. Which is, how do you figure out who to talk to and who do you spend time with?
Great point.
Which is, you know, things that we help clients with all the time.
Donna, do we have slides left in the presentation?
This is it. It's only appendix, which is, I put this in here to remind people about patents and somewhere this should be covered. It doesn't have to be its own slide, but it should be in the overview. And then also just the ending slide, I wanted to share this because this is actually a true story. This is a company we worked with and the team and the CEO liked this slide. This was their style. They liked this photograph. And then it went to the board and the board said, well, it's, you know, I mean, you need to show more diversity than that. And this is actually for shingles vaccine. And so this one was developed, and I don't know what the final was, but the point is that, you know, we're working in global markets. This to me is a very US focused photograph for sure. You know, we have to think about, it's not just, it sort of goes back to colors and themes and photography. Mm-hmm. We didn't have a slide on photography, but images matter because images tell you something too.
I agree with that. May I ask you a final question?
Sure.
When I look on the conversations in the last 16 years I had since I'm in the life science industry, I frequently met the expectation on the market that putting together a pitch deck isn't much work, and it's not really the major part of the success in fundraising or selling a company to an industrial partner. From your expertise and from the expertise of your team and with all the pitch decks you designed and all the teams that you worked with, what is your recommendation to companies on how much time they should invest as a minimum to develop their story in a pitch deck?
Well, look, I mean, it really is, you know, much of it is about, it's the presentation, but it's also the delivery, right? So, you know, we have the Canaccord presentation coming up next week. We're working with a company right now on their deck and their delivery. They're new to that kind of a conference, and it's not just the deck, but it's not what they say, it's how they say it. Right. So equal weighting. And we didn't talk about that today either. All right. Yeah. So all we're talking about is what goes into things, not just how do you actually communicate what you need to communicate and get people on board. So leadership in you know, is this company in a leadership team that we can invest in and feel confident?
There are a lot of questions open. Let me ask you the final question. In which areas can you and your team provide help to life science companies? Only in the presentation, or do you also train people in storytelling, help them develop the stories? What's your positioning on the market?
So we are a full service agency. So we are working with clients from our immersion process, which is a messaging and positioning, through execution and visibility and programming around visibility, whether that be from a media relations, PR, medical communication. We have news flow. So for example, I was excited about the Poseidon news today. Our team is working on that. So that was very exciting. Yesterday, our team was working on the Alzheimer's news with Roche and AC Immune. We do a lot of that. And then, you know, we certainly help with presentations and presentation training as well.
Super. In case someone from the audience is interested engaging your team, what's the best way to reach out to you?
The best way to reach out to me, and I thought I had a slide. Here we go. Here's my contact information.
Super. I will also put it in the description of the podcast episode and on YouTube so that people can find it easily.
Terrific.
Donna, thank you very much for your time and your presentation. It's great to get some insights in how to structure presentations in the life science industry. And if anybody from the audience is interested working with you, I'm pretty sure they pick up the contact data from the episode.
It sounds like they need you too, Christian.
I think you're a much better choice. Much better choice than you. Your team is perfect and your presentation is absolutely awesome. I love this 15 slide methodology.
Great. Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Thank you for your time and have a great day. Bye-bye.
You too. Take care. Bye now.
Did you like the episode? Then please, please, please leave a 5-star review on Spotify and Apple, and make sure that you like, comment, and share the YouTube episode. It helps that the algorithm delivers the episode to people who also benefit from it the same way than you did. Have a great day.